Good morning. Today is Tuesday, July the 19th. Joining us this morning, busy guy, Tom Mattson, right?
You're right. It's summer. It's construction. And
yeah, well, you're not. I'm noticing your fingernails are kind of clean. It's not like you're out there playing in the asphalt or anything.
Well, but you see the cuts on my arms from the blackberries. I have a brush for my fingernails.
Oh, okay. So those weren't from private picking. That was from you going out there and lopping them off yourself?
Well, my blackberries are growing into the road right away, so I go out and lop them off.
Okay. Before the berries are there.
Well, no, I've got plenty in my yard. If you have blackberries, you can never keep up with them.
Yeah. All righty. Are you ready for your question here?
You bet.
Why do we say play possum?
Because we want people to think we're dead so they won't beat us up anymore.
Imagine that you're a member of a group whose leader asks for volunteers. You aren't interested in the project or don't have time. What's the best course of action? Sneak hurriedly out of the room? Suddenly become involved in a conversation with a friend, or sit very still, acting as though you didn't hear and play possum. Any veteran woodsman will advise the last alternative. That's because pioneers discovered 300 years ago that a Native American animal has traits like few others. White men called the creature opossum in an attempt to imitate the speech of Native Americans. Only purists use that name, though. Most persons clipped it to possum. Captured, a possum shows great skill in pretending to be dead. Even stroking or shaking seldom causes it to open its eyes. So when a person does a good job of playing possum, he or she is, for the moment, dead to challenges or suggestions.
That's pretty much what I said, wasn't it?
Yeah, not quite so eloquently, though. Go ahead, you can use that one anytime in supervisors' chambers or any of your state associations.
Exactly.
Just playing possum.
I've been doing that a lot lately. Yeah. The older I get, the more possum I become. Yeah. I have a resident possum at my house, and he's teaching me.
Way to go.
He's my possum guru.
Yeah. So with the surplus that we're hearing exists at the state, are there any discussions about road and bridge infrastructure that are being discussed with any of those dollars?
There's lots of discussion at the needs level with those of us at Public Works and counties and cities, and lots of possum from the legislator and the governor. A lot of money, but we're not seeing anything really dedicated to road maintenance, road safety. Most of it, there is a little bit going to active transportation.
Like the green buses?
No, there's money for transit. There's money for bikes and pedestrians. But really the fundamental need for most counties everywhere, not just in California, is basic road maintenance. Money to fill potholes, money to dig ditches, money to brush the sides of the roads.
So is there just a lack of recognition, or that just doesn't get you votes?
There's no ribbon cutting that goes along with basic road maintenance. Big projects, everybody's there for the ribbon cutting. Side of the road maintenance, brushing it, not so much.
Well, maybe if you got a new tractor or something.
Well, you brought that up.
Or maybe a champagne bottle.
Nah.
A small one.
We are getting, actually, Measure Z did fund us this year for two new road brush tractors and a crew of three. So that should greatly help our road brushing in the future.
Is that just a one-year fund?
The capital is the first year, but the positions should be ongoing since they're county positions. So it will add a formal brush cutting crew to the county. First time we've had one in many, many, many years since the last time we had to cut our budgets down. But they will be dedicated. We figure they can do about 110 miles a year. We're going to try to match them with Cal Fire money to create fire breaks along our roads so that we can leverage grant money for the private property owners to not only tie off of our effort and do some clearing and limbing on their property to turn the roads into fire safe corridors.
That's what I was thinking. You know, the buffer, you're not obviously going to cut a 25-foot swale in somebody's front yard. That would probably be frowned upon, but if you count the road in there.
We count the road, and then we can use our people and equipment and the cost of that as a match, because almost every grant requires a match, and if we can show a match, we can leverage funds to improve our, you know, our fire safety throughout the county.
I know it sounds a little goofy because during the wintertime, a lot of the grasses and stuff don't grow. But could that be a 12-month program?
When we did it before, we did it for 12 months, yes. We are so far behind on our brush cutting that it's, you know, at 110 miles a year, that's 10 years to get our entire system mowed. But that this will be an addition to the mowing we currently do. And so it will be focused, you know, initially focused on our arterial roads, you know, Alder Point Road, Matola Road, Shelter Cove Road, Bryson Road, Bald Hills Road, the roads that, you know, are really in fire country and where we need to provide good fire protection. Not only the road has to be good shape for all the fire apparatus to get out there, but to serve as a fire break where the fire can be defended.
So when you say brushing, Tom, is that like the lawnmowers that are on golf courses?
No.
Just kind of drop down and cut the grass? Is this knocking down trees and big, thick bushes?
They'll take out basically limbs to up about 6 inches. And then, you know, we do have lots of chainsaws that go on and the pole saws to tie onto that. They're heavy duty brush hogs, basically. They're not your common lawnmower. Not, you know, if you've seen them on the side of the road with Caltrans, because that's where most people drive on the state highway, and they do a lot more brushing because they have a lot more money than we do. But that's the same type of mower. It's a regular size tractor with ours is going to be a 60-inch mower head, and they're very.
That's pretty big.
They're very productive.
It's a 5-footer.
They're very productive.
Yeah.
And you get a lot of range every day.
Aren't pole saws cool?
They are, unless you're the one using them, unless you have a lot of experience.
Well, or it's your house, you know, so instead of having to shimmy up or climb a ladder or something, get one of those bad boys and, you know, at least take it up a little bit.
Yeah, I've got my own pole saw at my house, and I've got my ladder and my chainsaw, too, because...
You don't climb the ladder and use the chainsaw, do you?
No comment.
Good. Safety first. Well, maybe.
It's safer having that limb down and not falling on my house or catching fire.
That's true. Unless it's in the fireplace.
That's true.
Okay. Touche. The back and forth will continue. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Tom Madsen. Today, he's Roads Tom. Not Roadkill Tom, just Roads Tom.
Roads, parks, you name it.
So with the challenges that are out there in the just the brushing and the culverts and the anticipating the water, all that kind of stuff, there's also still the time of the year when you do the projects.
Yep.
How do you know what the impact of the project will be on the rainwater that's going to happen in a year or this fall or in 2 or 3 years? Are the models close? Are the studies close to being accurate?
For anything that goes through engineering, yes. Because they do look at the watershed, they look at the runoff, they look at the size of everything. For basic road maintenance, it's pretty much true as well, because the guys have been out there so long and they have so much experience. You know, they know where their problem areas are. They know where the culverts are too small. They know where the culverts are rotting out and need to be replaced. And so it's all worked into the project, whether it's maintenance or engineering. But of course, with engineering, there's a lot more heavy look at it, with all the calculations and everything that need to be done. And, you can go back and forth between the two, because a lot of times I'll take the faith of my road supervisor who's seen it.
He's experienced
over a calculation that says a maybe. But for most of the, projects and grants and everything else that you have to keep for paperwork, you have to have those calculations.
So when they're coming to you, most times do they say, Tom, we need more capacity on this train? Or do they say, boy, that's really overkill. We really don't need that much.
Everything we have is either too small or just right. I don't have much.
Not too many too bigs?
I don't have too many too bigs. We have to look at a minimum size, because even in a roadside ditch, if you have a small culvert, just because of the water flow, the likelihood of it getting plugged up by a wad of grass and dirt or something.
About 95%?
95%. So yeah. You want to have, our standard minimum that we're doing right now is 18 inches. We've had 12-inch, 8-inch, even smaller culverts out there in the past. And, the county did what it had to do with what it had available at the time. Now we look at it a little bit more holistically, but I have to tell you, the cost of culverts just went up 30% in the last 6 months.
Plastic?
Plastic and metal. The supply chain issues in America are real, and they are hitting the bottom line.
So as you look at those, do you... You must just cut the number of projects that you're going to do.
That's all we can do. We went in this year thinking we were going to do, X 100 feet of culvert. And when we got around the order, and people told us, well, prices just went up 30%. So what do? You order 30% less. It's all you can do.
So how do you prioritize at that point?
Well, we look at, the ones that definitely have to be replaced because they're rusted out.
Just falling apart.
They're falling apart. They have to be replaced. Other ones that, are marginal or need upsizing, they'll have to be put off. You have to do the ones that at least we feel are going to collapse, because we certainly don't want collapsed culverts in the middle of winter.
FEMA's not going to come in on the white horse.
Sometimes they do, but even at that, it destroys the road, costs millions of dollars to repair, and it's not good for anybody.
30% sounds like a big hit, unless you got one really, really long culvert. So the numbers are still a lot of projects that would be done, but that one big one, you're going to have to delay.
Yeah. And most of our culverts are through maintenance. So they're, 20 feet, 40 feet, 60 feet. We have a few that are a lot bigger and a lot longer, but the vast majority are basically the 40-foot and under range, a few feet below the road surface.
When you replace, do you have to cut the asphalt?
Or oh, yeah.
You can't just slide inside?
We've looked.
Sleeve, I think.
Yeah, we've done sleeves. Sleeves can be cost-effective, especially when the culvert's a lot deeper. So we've done a number of the sleeves. We have a company that we work with on a regular basis. If it's close to the surface, it's cheaper for us just to go out with a backhoe and a couple of crew members and, dig a trench, replace the culvert, call it good. But, yeah, when it starts getting...
Repave it,
yeah, when it starts... Well, sometimes.
Okay.
That's another difficulty, is the cost of paving. And, so sometimes they get left to gravel for a little while, and then we do come back and pave them over. Our chip seal projects, when we're looking at a chip seal area, the first thing we look at is, this mile of row, okay, how many of the culverts do we need to replace? Replace all the culverts. We might leave that, over winter. Then we patch it, and you want to give it a good year after you patch it with asphalt to let it
just kind of settle and pack
in. Let it cure and it basically cure, because if you do a chip seal right on fresh asphalt, it doesn't stick nearly as well. You have to let it cure for a while. So we like to do our prep a year early, and then come back the next year and do the chip seal over it. So you'll see a lot of roads some roads at least, that within a mile you'll see a whole bunch of culvert replacements and then nothing else, and wonder what's going on. And then the next summer we'll come in with a chip seal and put.
Last time we got together about what this year you were going to be able to accomplish because of some of the extra dollar there. Due to this increase in cost,
not
still a good year, but maybe you're goatish instead of bullish.
Not nearly as bullish. Had to cut my expectations by 30%.
Okay. But still, historically, over the last 10 years, this is one of the better years.
Yeah, this is one of the better years. It was now starting to run flush. We've been doing a lot of culverts with that. We've been, you know, successful with leveraging Measure Z funding for chip seals. And we do those in addition to our regular budget. So I might ask for 5 miles of chip seals from Measure Z, but we'll still be doing another 5 miles somewhere else from our regular gas tax money. Measure Z is a bit difficult because it's hard to plan for something you don't know you're going to get or not.
Right.
So that's really a wish list item, and when we get it, we're very, very grateful. But it makes it difficult to make a 10-year plan when you don't know each year how much you're going to get.
Yeah, bobbing and weaving, yep. So to speak. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Tom Mattson. Tom, for our purposes this morning, is the roads guy for Humboldt County. Fluctuating gas prices. I'm sure that there are those who believe that you are in hog heaven, and there are those that are looking at you going, you know, you guys drive around an awful lot. You're probably getting hammered by this thing just as much as any other department. Well, sheriff, maybe not like the DA's office or somebody like that, but those costs are also coming back and kind of nibbling on your heels also. What have the gas prices done for the roads crews and public works in general?
It's a good chunk of our budget. When your fuel is a big part of your budget and basically the fuel cost doubles, we have to pay the same cost. So it comes right out of, you know, it's just like the culvert price is increasing. You've got to decrease something else that you're doing. And so, you know, we have to do the travel we have to do, and that cost of doing that basically doubled. So what do you cut back on? Well, not only do you have a 30% increase in the cost of culverts, now you have to pay for the increase in cost of gas. So guess what? Materials, you buy less materials, you buy less asphalt, you buy less culverts, you buy less gravel.
Are there pieces of gear, Tom, that are available that would give the troops out in the field more efficiencies so that, you know, maybe you couldn't pave them as much as you would like or chip seal, but by golly, they could get out there and really whip up on something else?
There's always different things that you can be doing. Our roads are so far behind on maintenance. There's just a ton of things that you can be doing converse to the things that cost a lot of money. So, again, we get back to, do you pave or do you brush cut? Do you clean ditches? There's no outside material cost to cleaning ditches.
Yeah, I would think the ditch cleaning thing would be a huge one, because if that backs up or blows out.
That goes with the culverts.
Holy Toledo.
You know, that's very, very important. And, again, we can't get to all of our ditches every year. And so that's really a big thing for us. If we don't have any materials, we're focusing on ditching.
Yeah, it's not like the guys are standing around twiddling their thumbs.
I don't think anybody would tolerate that. If anybody's even thinking about doing that or looks like they're doing that, I get a phone call. And believe me, we do not take that lightly at all.
I would suspect, you know, when you feed on your own.
But, you know, when that's cool. But when they're on approved breaks or on their lunchtime, that's a part of the schedule.
That's labor law.
If you're finding a place on a back road to try to take a nap, I've gotten those phone calls and we've dealt with those employees.
Yeah. Particularly if everybody is understanding what's going on and understands the purpose. I would think it would be as difficult to keep him from going into overtime than it is to, you know, motivate him to do the job, because they know what's going on this time of the year.
Exactly.
Really does have an impact in the fall and in the winter, and you know, if community safety is all part of this and community benefit, yeah.
It's a lot easier to work overtime in the summer with daylight than it is to try to do anything in the winter when it's dark at 5 o'clock. You know, you want to set
and muddy,
you
want to
set
wet,
everything up in the summer to make yourself have an easy winter. And, you know, thankfully, since 2019, Mother Nature has given us easy winters, even though it's bad for the environment in the state not to have any water. That's actually good for roads. So,
with some of the flooding that goes on traditionally when there is that going rain thing happening, are you able to anticipate now? You can't really get into the riverbeds and creek beds and dredge because, you know, all the environmental constraints. How's that for a nice word, huh? that prohibit that. But you know that if it comes up over the roadbed or starts getting close to the abutments, you know that there's going to be some erosion and some damage. Can you design around that stuff or anticipate, or is that just something that happens when we get the floods?
Well, the areas that we know what's going to occur, we generally use the bar principle. Big something rock. And generally, you know, that's what most people use to protect their roads. It's retaining walls, rock. Rock is the cheaper because the retaining wall, again, is a structure. It's engineered, etc. But lots of rock. The county uses lots of rock, and the bigger the rock, the better. The bigger the river, the bigger the rock.
Where do you get the rock?
There's a number of private quarries throughout the county. The county actually has agreements with a number of property owners to operate our own quarries.
Oh, really?
Yes. And so, but mostly we do the smaller rock off the river bars. We have several river bars that we own, and several we have agreements.
So you're able to just go in and kind of scrape
off?
Yeah,
we get permits, and we go to bring the rock in.
Well,
we
have legally,
Yes, we have a rock crusher that we crush the rock to the size we need it to. But most of the bigger rock, you know, there's several large rock quarries in the county that are very important to not only the county, but to Caltrans, to the Army Corps engineer. The rock they're using to do the jetties right now is from local rock. So there is rock available. It's a resource in this county, and it's very important that we have it here, especially in emergencies when we have things blowing out, and the only possible way to save it is to drop a lot of big rock in there in a very quick manner.
Big splashes?
You're hoping it's not splashing, but yeah, sometimes it does.
Yeah. So when those get put in, do you just kind of pile them? I know it sounds stupid, right? A rock pile. You just kind of pile them in? Is there a design to it? Are they placed in there with some of the gear?
You place them with an excavator, and you try to knock them in and lodge them in with each other so that you're building a toe at the bottom and then tying in everything so that you don't have a loose piece of rock that's just going to tumble and flow out. You want to try to interlock them, and generally it's a lot of excavator work.
And the guys know what they're doing, so.
Well, we have one excavator, and our guys run it pretty well. So when we have big issues, we hire outside contractors, and there's a number of them in Humboldt County that are very, very good. And frankly, as an engineer, when I watch some of these better operators, it's more of an art than anything
else.
It's
kind of cool, huh?
It's how good and how special they're able to do this kind of thing. And it's just moving quick, quick, quick. And it's like putting a painting together.
Well, and avoiding a keystone.
Exactly.
Yeah, because I would think that would be the biggest nightmare, fear, whatever you want to call it, is you have one of those, it moves, and now
everything moves. Yep.
Yeah, that's.
And it's not a perfect world. That does happen.
Well, particularly if you get like a nice chunk of wood hammering away, you know, it comes down out of the hills.
Yep.
You give it 30, 40 miles an hour, and then it thumps.
Kaboom.
Yeah. Things tend to happen at that point.
Yeah, and a lot of, you know, when we design new culverts, especially on streams, you know, we have to look at that live flow. We have to look at the 100-year flow plus all the debris that's coming down with it. So we're not just looking at the water flow. We're looking at, well, what size of logs are in the watershed. If that 100-year flow is smaller than the biggest log that could come down and plug it, well, then that culvert needs to be sized up because it needs to let that material go through.
Yeah, it's got to blow it. Otherwise, it'll blow.
Otherwise, it'll blow the road.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:41.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Tom Matson from Humboldt County Public Works. What's the condition of our bridges? I mean, we've kind of talked about the bridges and the culverts and stuff. Can you grade them out? Do you know where we are?
All of them get reviewed annually by specialists from Caltrans. When we get
even the county ones?
All the county bridges. The only county that does their own bridge review is LA County, and they're big. They have enough money to do that. So Caltrans actually is the responsible agency for local bridges throughout the state of California. So they have a crew that comes out annually, reviews each bridge. Every time they review it, they come back to us with a list of items to be done or nothing to be done. Most of the time, there's items to be done. They give you a timeline to do it. There's actually specific...
Is this like ADA timeline? Or just in a sense, okay, this thing's got to be dealt with soon.
Say like, paint 2 years, replace rail 1 year, things like that. They're
so
reasonable.
Specific items. Okay.
Yeah, they're cool. Very reasonable. And there's actually specific funding available for those repairs. So the bridges, they're not as bad a shape as people might think they would be. California does a better job, I think, than most states because we have the state reviewing all of our bridges on a regular basis. And we do have specific bridge maintenance funding set aside. Saying that, not all of our bridges are in great shape. We have bridges that are weight limited. We're looking, we're going through the replacement process right now for the Honeydew Bridge, which is weight limited. And we have a number of what we call rail car bridges that we've put over creeks, et cetera, that we're going through the process of Caltrans and determining the appropriate weight limit ratings, even though they're stamped right on them, 80 tons. So there's all kinds of different bridges. But all in all, most of Humboldt County bridges, I can say, are safe. If they're listed for a weight reduction, don't exceed that weight because if you damage the bridge, we will be going after your insurance for the cost of the repairs. But if there's a serious condition with the bridge that is known about by the inspection, Caltrans calls us immediately. There's only one bridge I've had to close in my entire career with the county, and that was Martin's Ferry Bridge out in Witchbeck.
Right.
And that was due to a landslide pushing the abutment out from underneath it. And that was a hard decision to make. I mean, that was a critical lifeline. But we were able to work with the state to leverage funding to get the repairs needed, in what government timeline was a rather quick fashion within a year or two. Because most of the time, right now, we're getting ready to go out to bid on the Panther Gap storm damage from 2019. So even in an emergency, it's 3 years generally before you get through the process and all the approvals. You can do certain things immediately, but there's a lot of hurdles and steps and paperwork and rejections along the way.
Well, if you anticipate that going in, you don't get frustrated with the timeline.
The public gets very frustrated.
If you are outside looking in, yeah.
If you live on a road and all of a sudden you have a 100-mile detour for 3 years, you are very, very frustrated.
Yeah, I would imagine. I would probably suggest a helicopter pad and a helicopter provided, including pilot, just to make it safe.
We've had areas where we had to run pilot cars after the after the 64 flood.
Right.
I believe they air-delivered hay to the rural ranches that were isolated. So, there's no ideas that aren't unreal in a real emergency, especially when people are stranded.
Is there enough contingency to pull that kind of stuff off?
Somehow we make it happen.
It's kind of the theme, huh, right now?
It's, you do what you have to do with what you have when you have it. And
well, hopefully pretty soon you're going to kind of have an idea of how much you have.
Well, we'll see. Later this morning, we'll be talking about road funding at the Board of Supervisors meeting, and we'll see where we go from there. And then when we finally close our books, we'll find out where the county's at.
Yeah, that would be – I'm sure everybody's holding their breath on that one.
Well, with roads, we really know where we're at. We have to track. We track all our revenue and expenses.
Yeah, but it's still a finite pot.
It's a finite pot, so. And we're spending a lot of money that we're not going to get back for years. All of the FEMA emergency projects, all the projects are reimbursable. And so, with FEMA, that takes an act of Congress. So we can do something and maybe not get funded for 10 years.
Act of Congress, act of God. They're kind of interchangeable.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah, God moves much quicker. Thanks. Well, hopefully this next hour or two will be good news for you.
We'll see. We'll get discussion started, and I assume it will be in depth.
All right. Have fun.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.